Today we continue to read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 28, titled Kapila's Instructions on Devotional Service, Text 26.
Bhakshodivasamishabhasya Mahavibhute
Yogi is therefore recommended to meditate upon the Lord's neck The Lord's transcendental form can either be meditated upon in the mind or placed in a temple in the form of a statue and decorated in such a way that everyone can contemplate it. Temple worship, therefore, is meant for persons who are not so advanced that they can meditate upon the form of the Lord. There is no difference between constantly visiting the temple and directly seeing the transcendental form of the Lord. They are of equal value. The advantageous position of the yogi is that he can sit anywhere in a solitary place and meditate upon the form of the Lord. A less advanced person, however, has to go to the temple, and as long as he does not go to the temple, he is unable to see the form of the Lord. Either by hearing, seeing or meditating, the objective is the transcendental form of the Lord. There is no question of voidness or impersonalism. The Lord can bestow the blessings of transcendental pleasure upon either the visitor of the temple, the meditated yogi, or one who hears about the Lord's transcendental form from scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. There are 9 processes for executing devotional service, of which Smaranam or meditation is one. Yogis take advantage of the process of Smaranam, whereas Bhakti Yogis take special advantage of the process of hearing and chanting. ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोऽभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामय्यं ददाति स्वपरान्तिकं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुं वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं सागरजातं सहगणलग्नाथान्वितं संसजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादां सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्णा कर्मसिन्धो नियमलो जगत्पते लोकेश गोपिकानन्दनमस्ते सप्तकाञ्चनगौरवृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुस्ते देवी प्रणमामि पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासवी गौरवप्रद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे It is said that an inquisitive person will try to find out the path that he has to take and get more details about it. Whereas an intelligent person will not only find out details of the path that he has to take, he will also be interested to know the path, the details of the path which others are going to take. So that is an intelligent person. Mother Devahuti is both inquisitive and intelligent. Her intelligent questions are that the jiva, the conditioned soul and the material nature, they are like made for each other. How does this conditioned soul get liberated? Is there any chance of this soul getting liberated at all? So she poses this question to Lord Kapila. Lord Kapila, seeing her inquisitiveness, he starts to explain the process of devotional service. So in the chapter 25 of this chapter, Lord Kapila starts to explain. That's why the chapter is entitled The Glories of Devotional Service. So in that chapter, he goes on to explain the Adhyatmik Yoga. This Adhyatmic Yoga comprises of three things: Bhakti, Jnana and Ashtanga Yoga. So Jnana is the Samkhya part of it, the Ashtanga Yoga is the asanas, and Bhakti Yoga has got nine limbs. So in that chapter, Lord Kapila makes a very significant statement saying that no matter what path you're going to take, even if you're taking the path of Jnana or Ashtanga Yoga, if you do not add the aspect of Bhakti in it, you will not accomplish success. He makes this prominent statement: perfection in self-realization cannot be attained by any kind of yogi unless he engages in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for that is the only auspicious path. So he makes the things clear straight away in the first, before he starts to explain the other paths. Then he goes on to explain Bhakti. Then after that, Mother Devaki asks, what kind of devotional service should I perform to attain your lotus feet? Then now she shows her intelligence and she is asking, okay, what is it that the other parts that you mentioned, the Jnana part, can you please explain that Jnana by which I can understand different tattvas? What is Jiva Tattva? What is Prakriti? How is this Prakriti binding? How is the whole creation happening? And how do I get out of it? Then she asks the other question about, you mentioned about the yoga system of different limbs for attaining liberation. So what is that? How many limbs does it have? So these are the questions she asks in chapter 25. In chapter 25, verse 28 to 29. That's the whole series where she's asking. And this particular chapter, 28, is the answer to the question about the different limbs of Ashtanga Yoga. So this chapter 28 is really dedicated to answer Mother Devaki's question about the different limbs of that yoga which lead you to liberation. So, in this section, Srila Prabhupada's purport actually driving home three key points. This is mentioned by His Grace in Unveiling the Lotus Feet. His Grace Bhujan Prabhu mentions how Srila Prabhupada brings about the three significant points in the entire purport. If you read these purports, he is first establishing the fact that God is a person. He drives away the impersonal aspect or the impersonalism which is prevalent. First he does that. Then he starts to describe, having established that the God is a person, so then he starts to describe the beauty of the Lord, especially in the deity form. And by that, he achieves the third thing, is he drives the attraction, or he is pushing us to see the beautiful form of the Lord. So these are the three things. So clearly driving away impersonalism, establishing that God is a person, and enhancing or describing the beauty of the Lord, and then through that encouraging us to take shelter of that beautiful form of the Lord. So that is how the this section is kind of described by Srila Prabhupada in the purport. So the beginning of this chapter starts off with do's and don'ts, which is yama, niyama. Then the aspect of asana, pranayama, pratyahara, they are all described. Then comes the aspect of general meditation. Just like if somebody walks in with a camera, it's called a panoramic camera, so he stands at a distance and then he takes the entire counter, so you can see Sushi Gaurantai, Sushi Radha Oliva, Sushi Jayanandale Subhadra, all of them in a panoramic view, it's there. So then he goes to Gaurantai altar, then he takes their picture, getting more focused. Then he goes to Radha Vallabha, takes their picture, then he goes to Dharma Balesudra, takes their picture. He's still not satisfied. He again comes back to Gaurantai, and he focuses on Nityananda Prabhu. He takes Nityananda Prabhu's picture, then Gaurantai Mahaprabhu's picture. He's still not satisfied. He zooms into the feet of Lord Nityananda, takes a picture, then goes above. He takes a picture of different limbs of Lord Nityananda. And he does the same for Gauranga Mahaprabhu, for all the lordships. So this is what the Ashtanga Yogi is asked to do. And that's the previous verses, set of verses from probably 13th to the 18th verses of this chapter. Gives a general description of the Lord along with his limbs and his beauty. They are all described. So the Lord is there, what are his different limbs and what does he possess in each of them. Then from the 19th verse onwards is the zooming into every limb. So every limb is taken and then the devotee, also the yogi, is asked to meditate on a particular limb. So does anyone remember what was the first limb that you asked to meditate on? Feet. Yes, lotus feet. Any reason why lotus feet has to be meditated first?
It's not without auspiciousness.
Brings all auspiciousness? Yes. Specifically, there was one more reason.
Because it has all the flags and all that which...
Yeah, the Lord's feet is marked with different auspicious symbols like flag. And what is the result of meditating there? Harudaya Andhakara. What does Andhakara mean? Darkness. So that darkness goes away from the heart. The thick gloom of darkness goes away by meditating on the feet of the Lord. It's a very nice verse. Because Bhagavatam can be sung nicely and it is very poetic. This particular verse, because we are going to see the description of the Lord's different angas, I thought it's more appropriate for me also to start with the feet.
Sanchintaye Bhagavatas Charanaravindam Vajram Dushadvajas Saroruhalam Chanadyam Uttunga Rakta Vilasan Nagachakra Bala Joshnadi Virahata Mahat Hridayandakaram.
The devotee should first concentrate his mind on the Lord's lotus feet, which are adorned with the marks of a thunderbolt, a gourd, a banner, and a lotus. The splendor of this beautiful ruby nails resembles the orbit of the moon and dispels the thick gloom of one's heart. So that is how we start off. So the beauty is not only in the form of the Lord, the beauty is also in the verses that describe. That is how Srimad Bhagavatam is also beautiful, it is very poetic, and yesterday's verse described, it has got a lot of metaphors in it. So the verses go on to describe the feet, how Lord Shiva also becomes auspicious by taking the water from that feet. From then, the yogi has to fix his mind on Mother Lakshmi. What does she do? Her job is not only to hold a nice flower in her hand and twirl it and give a nice pose, but she actually does service. It is said that this Mother Lakshmi, she actually cleans the floors of Vaikuntha. She not only gives a nice pose by standing next to the Lord, but when it's needed, she rolls up her sleeves and gets into action by doing service. So this is something we can take inspiration from. she is doing service. At this moment, she is massaging the legs and thighs of the Lord, and she is carefully serving Him in that way. So after meditating on the feet and the thighs, Mother Lakshmi, then the yogi has to fix his mind on the Lord's thighs, which is the storehouse of energy. Then he should fix his mind on the hips. The hips are encircled with a girdle and it is covered with a yellow silk cloth. Then yesterday was talked about the moon-like navel of the Lord's abdomen. Moon-like navel. So here we see how the poetic aspect of Srimad Bhagavatam is being brought out. And this navel is from where the entire universe has come. And the glories of the Lord is such that He is able to create Brahma without the assistance of Mother Lakshmi. And then the yogi should concentrate on the Lord's nipples, which resemble the pair of most exquisite emeralds. And today's verse is about meditating on the chest of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is the abode of Goddess Lakshmi. So the two things that we have to focus on this particular verse, the yogi has been asked to focus, is the chest and the neck. So the chest is the abode of Mother Lakshmi and the neck is adorned with Kaustubha gem. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada brings out the point which Lord Kapila was mentioning in the 25th chapter. Here he clearly says, a yogi who can meditate perfectly on that spot, which is the chest of the Lord, which is the abode of Mother Lakshmi, only then he can derive perfection in his eightfold yoga system. It is not that you can achieve all that anima, lagima, prapti, all that by meditating on something that is impersonal or void. You have to meditate on the chest of the Lord to get those material prowess. Those perfections in yoga you can achieve only by meditating on the chest of the Lord. Then Srila Prabhupada goes on to explain how the neck of the Lord enhances the Kaustubha gem. While reading the first time, he said, is he making a mistake? No. Usually we put on jewelry and all that so that we look beautiful, but Krishna is a special person. He actually decorates the jewels. Bhushana, Bhushanaka. He adds beauty to the Kaustubha gem. Not that the Kaustubha gem is adding beauty to him. And it is said that the yogi should imprint on his mind the neck of the Personality of Godhead. So that is how deeply the meditation has to be. Then Prabhupada goes on to explain how this meditation that the yogi is doing, he can sit in any place and do it. So initial first reading of the purport, I thought, okay, Prabhupada is saying that the yogi who is meditating on the form of the Lord sitting in a solitary place is more advanced, whereas a person who cannot do that, only he has to come to the temple. So we are all less advanced. And that's why we are all sitting there. And now some Ashtanga yogi reads and said, see, Prabhupada is telling him, what do you guys do? Give up your process, come and do Ashtanga yoga. It's there in the purport. Because the yogi is, who can do that is more advanced, whereas those who can't do, they have to come to temple and take their darshan. But when you read the entire purport, Srila Prabhupada in the last line says that yogis take advantage of the process of smarana, whereas bhakti yogis take special advantage of the process of hearing and chanting. So, we will elaborate on that. What is the advantage? What is that special advantage which bhakti yogis have? Earlier I described how there is the Ashtanga yoga has yama, niyama, asana. So this particular aspect of smaranam is in the seventh step of Ashtanga Yoga. Whereas where does the smaranam come in Bhakti Yoga?
Third.
First three?
Third.
Third, very good. What is the first two?
Sharanam
Kirtanam, very good. So if you analyze minutely what the Ashtanga Yogis are doing it at the seventh step, the Bhakti Yogis are able to do it in the third step. If you are hearing, if your Shravanam and Kirtanam are strong, then you are able to remember, meditate on that particular Lord. In the beginning of the Purport, Srila Prabhupada tells about the various energies of the Lord. And in particular, he stresses on this prowess is represented by Mahalakshmi. Now, this particular verse that Srila Prabhupada is referring to is the verse from Vedashtadhara Upanishad, where it says, Parasya Shakti Vidyaya Vishvayate Svabhavikai Jnana Bala Kriyacha. So, while describing these energies of the Lord in the 10th chapter, 10th canto, 13th verse, 10, 13, 57, Krishna's energy. Srila Prabhupada in the Bhagavad gives details about this different prowess. And the best part of Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad is that he gives a lot of analogies even for a common man to understand what is going on. Krishna's energy, his Maya Shakti or Swarupa Shakti, is one, but it is manifested in varieties. Parasa Shakti Vividaya Vishvayate. The difference between Vaishnavas and Mayavadis is that Mayavadis say all the energy is one. Whereas Vaishnavas know that the same energy is there, but it has got different purposes, and because it is doing different activities, it is different. First example Srila Prabhupada gives is that of a tree. A tree has got leaves, fruits and flowers. Overall you can say the tree is one, whereas every part of the tree has a different function, so it is has differences as well. And this is an example which Srila Prabhupada elaborates in a much nice way, so that a common man who is working with machines, tools, got hands-on experience, he can relate to it. To give another example, in a machine all the parts may be iron. So you may call that the entire thing is iron. So that's the Mayavadi's vision. So that's iron, this is also iron. So, whereas the person who knows how to operate the machine, he looks in every part and then he says that okay, this has got a specific function, and that is why this is a wheel, this is a screw, this is a spindle, and this is where you need to apply the lubrication. And every part of the machine has got a specific function, although all of them are made of iron. So the Vaishnavas are able to make this particular distinction, even though the energies are one. Then Prabhupada goes on to explain how Krishna's energies were having made the, even the common man understand that there is variety in a machine as well. Krishna's power is variegated, and thus the same Shakti or potency works in variegated ways. Vivida means varieties. There is unity in variety. Thus, Yoga Maya and Mahamaya are among the varied individual parts of the same potency, and all of these individual potencies work in their own varied ways. So this is how Srila Prabhupada is bringing out how the Lord's energies are working in different ways. There is Yoga Maya, there is Mahamaya. Then he goes on to explain what are these individual potencies. The Samvit, Sandini and Hladini potencies. So Samvit is the Krishna's potency for existence. Then Sandini is Krishna's potency for knowledge. And his potency for pleasure, which is Lali. Now, this is where the Bhakti Yogis take their special advantage from, because they get the pleasure by surrendering to the internal potency of the Lord. Whereas, the Ashtanga Yogi, what are they aiming for? Is that mystic perfection? And what is it said that even to get that, you have to approach the Lord along with His energy, you have to focus on His chest and worship Lakshmi Narayana. But the focus is to get material progress. Whereas a devotee surrenders to the Lord, takes shelter of the internal potency, and thereby he gets pleasure. Many times you read this verse, it tells about how can we assess our own progress in bhakti. There we get a clear description of how to assess our own progress and where are we getting this satisfaction. It is described with a nice analogy. Bhakti paresha anubhava viraktir anyatra cha. So when practicing bhakti, when you're starting devotional service, you get three things. This is like the three D's, which is the devotion, the first D, direct experience of the Lord, second D, and then third D is detachment, three D's. Devotion, direct experience, and detachment from this world. These are the symptoms of a person, or we ourselves can assess how we are progressing in bhakti. If we are getting devotion, direct experience, and detachment. So these three happen simultaneously, and the famous example given is that of having a nice meal. So after having a nice meal, three things happen. First thing, we get sleep. What are the three things that happen?
Pleasure.
Nourishment, free from hunger. So, this pleasure that is coming from the Kuladini Sakti because you are taking shelter of the internal potency. I'll just read the purport of that verse. It's 11.242, this particular verse. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained this analogy as follows. Bhakti or devotion may be compared to satisfaction, tushti. So tushtihi, pushtihi, shudhapayo, anukasham. So the tushti is the satisfaction. So bhakti is compared to satisfaction because they both take the form of pleasure. So bhakti or devotion and satisfaction, both of them give you pleasure. Second is paresha anubhava, experience of the Supreme Lord and pushti, nourishment or analogous. Experience of the Lord and nourishment. So that's why the darshan of the Lord gives nourishment. The Lord Himself. And hearing Srimad Bhagavatam gives nourishment. So that is how we understand nourishment and direct experience of the Lord are similar. And that is what sustains one's life. So if you are well nourished, you are sustaining your life. Similarly in bhakti, you have to sustain nicely, you have to take darshan, you have to read Srimad Bhagavatam. The last aspect is virakti, detachment. And that is compared to your hunger is gone. So even if a full course meal is given, if you are not hungry, you remain detached. Because you have experienced satisfaction, because you have experienced nourishment from bhakti, you become detached. So that is how you experience peace. So this is one of the advantages, the special advantage which the bhakti yogis, because bhakti yogis have, because they take shelter of the internal potency. One may ask, what happened to the sins that I am doing? Will that be eradicated? Yes, that is the another advantage of performing bhakti. Even Lord Kapila himself says that you don't have to make a special endeavor to digest the food. The fire in the stomach digests the food. Similarly, bhakti destroys the sin. And Mother Devaki, while describing the glories of bhakti, she says how a person born even in a chandala family, even if he unconsciously chants your name, he can perform Vedic sacrifice. So this sin is a manifest sinful reaction. The body that we have is a manifest sinful reaction. Other processes do not eradicate sins which are manifest. They may take away certain things maybe like cleansing process, but not cleansing at the root level. So in the other verse, Yamadivir Lokapate, in that particular verse, it is said, a nice analogy is also given. So there are a lot of dust particles in a cup of water, and what the other yoga practitioners do is, they allow the water to just settle down, and then the dust will settle down, and then you think that the water is purified, whereas the dust is still at the bottom. If you shake the cup again, the dirt comes up. Similarly, when agitation happens, other yoga processes may not be fully proficient in taking out the root cause of those agitations and sinful reactions, whereas bhakti goes to the root. That's what we sing, Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevayam. So one of the powerful potencies, three things that are described is meditating on the form, then seeing the daily form of the Lord. The third thing is hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. So they all produce the same effect. So even unconscious chanting takes away the sinful reaction, whereas in other processes, the process itself is very rigid. The interesting point that I came across is, many times we hear how the Lord can perform a particular action from different parts of his limbs. Angani yasya kendriyavrittimanti. So he accepts the food through his eyes. Whereas the bhakti yogis, they also can perform one particular action from a different part of their limbs. This is described by Lord Brahma in his prayers for creative energy. He says, "Oh my Lord, your devotees can see through the ears." It's not a typo. Your devotees can see through your ears by the process of bona fide hearing, and thus their hearts become cleansed. And you take your seat there. Devotees, just by hearing, they are able to see. So the ears are able to see. You are so merciful to your devotees that you manifest yourself in that particular eternal form of transcendence in which they always think of you. So that particular verse, when Lord Brahma is offering prayers, he says this interesting thing. In that same section, Brahma goes on to explain, "Oh my Lord, persons who smell the aroma of your lotus feet," so smelling is described, "carried by the air of Vedic sound," so smell naturally goes to air, nose, here it is said, "carried by the air of Vedic sound through the holes of the ears." The smell of the aroma of your lotus feet, carried by the air of Vedic sound through the holes of your ears, accept your devotional service. For them, you are never separated from the lotus of their hearts. So they are able to smell through their ears, they are able to see through their ears. These are all devotees who are taking shelter of the internal pleasure potency of the Lord. And answering Mother Deva these questions, Lord Kapila says, "Don't worry about liberation, that will happen as a side effect. Because you ask me, like, when will the jiva ever get liberated? Bhakti avoids liberation also, but that's not the main focus. So that's also a special advantage. You don't have to specially endeavor for cleansing your heart, you don't have to specially endeavor for getting rid of your sins or getting liberated. All these happen as a side effect, and bhakti avoids more bhakti. So you get more devotion to the Lord, and then you enter into the planet of the Lord, which is Vaikuntha. So all these beautiful descriptions are there in Srimad Bhagavatam. The process is described in Srimad Bhagavatam. The persons who have done this process, like Dhruva Maharaj, how he goes to Vaikuntha, then Mother Devaki herself, she will perfect the process. Her heart will get rid, she will get cleansed of the anarthas in her heart. She will get fixed. She will develop taste. She will develop attachment. She will attain love of God. And finally she will go to Kapila, Vaikuntha. So these case studies are described in Srimad Bhagavatam. The beautiful form of the Lord is also described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The challenges that we face in this particular yuga, that's described in Srimad Bhagavatam, and how do we overcome them, and what is the advantage, biggest advantage of this yuga, that's also described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this time of the year, we have got a lot of Srimad Bhagavatam sets in the temple. So somebody likes to take Srimad Bhagavatam or gift it to someone else, that will be the biggest gift that you can share to others as well.
Hari Go.
So stop there and ask if there are any comments, questions, corrections.
Yes. What is the mechanism? How bhakti destroys the sins?
How bhakti destroys the sins? It takes away the sinful tendency as well, which is the root, and it dispels the ignorance, which is the root of the sin. You see the sinful reaction cycle. So first is avidya, and because of avidya you have false ego. So then because of false ego you lose particular activities which are of sinful nature, and you may not know that you are doing them. And just like a seed which is planted under the soil, there is no trace of anything coming up, so it will be unmanifested, and it will start to sprout, then it will be a small plant. Similarly, sin is described in an unmanifest, manifest. And each time you do a particular action, a sinful action, two things happen. You are going to get a reaction for it. Second thing is, you are already starting to sow another seed to do that particular thing again. And actual devotion is explained how a thief, if he steals, two things happen, he is going to get arrested, but he has sown a seed or another desire to steal is also done. Other processes may, by Yama Niyama, one of the Yama Niyamas is don't steal, and things like that, where it doesn't take away the stealing propensity inside a particular person. Whereas bhakti goes to the root of the sinful propensity and ignorance, and it takes away that particular ignorance. So that is why when Prahlad Maharaj offers prayers to Lord Narasimhadev, from this section where it is prayers offered by Prahlad Maharaj from the island of Jambudvipa, there, Prahlad Maharaj asks the Lord to remove the ignorance from the core of the heart. One may say, why is Prahlad Maharaj asking? But he is praying for us. If you recite that particular prayer and understand the meaning, he describes how Om Namo Bhagavate Narasimhaya, in that particular verse, he describes how your form is very beautiful. You have thunder, gold like nails and teeth. Please vanquish the demon-like desires and ignorance from the core of the mind. So that is how he prays, and that is the process of bhakti. So that is how he takes away the sins.
Thank you very much.
Can you want to add to that?
Just a different topic. How do we understand, like we hear people, if they hear the holy name once, chant the holy name once, take prasadam once, or read one page of Shilpama's books, touch the books, they get free from more sins than they can commit in millions of lifetimes, and they get a human birth in their next life. So people may do that, but then for the rest of their life they may commit simple activity. So it's hard to understand how they would get a human birth if they continue on with simple activity for the rest of their life. One may think, well, wouldn't planets and get punished and take an animal birth after that. So how is it we can understand they get a human birth even
unconsciously?
So you had a slight amount of emotional service.
Can you please summarize?
This question is, we say that even if a person unconsciously chants the holy name or takes prasadam or touches Lord Prabhupada's boots, at least human birth is guaranteed. His point is, if that particular person goes on to commit more sinful activities, he is going to get a hellish life. So obviously that human birth is guaranteed. So this particular aspect of devotional service, that is why in Bhagavatam we have case studies of characters like Ajami. So when we read those particular case studies, then from Chaitanya Charitamrita about Jaga and other, and how they took up the process and there was a change in the heart. So even if that particular person does not remember Krishna for the rest of his life, what do we read? That at the time of death, all the actions that you perform will flash in front of you. And many times you say Rath Yatra, people are seeing the Lord's form and that gets imprinted on them. So the Lord will force the remembrance in that particular living entity, and according to his particular karmas that he has done, he will take care of putting them in a particular position. But at least consciously or unconsciously they have seen the Lord, that benefit will always be there. So by the strength of the Shastras, by the case studies that are given, we can understand that it will happen. That is one we point, and then through scientific ways like reincarnation also, you can see how devotee, there was a case study of devotee took another birth and then he continued on his devotional service, and man taking a body of woman, another case study. Prabhupada disciple dying after taking initiation and then reborn as a Mataji. It's a case study. Then he continued his devotional service. And I don't have case studies about extremely sinful people getting human births in the modern context, but it's there in the Shastras. But everybody who knows, they can.
Yeah, you know, Dayade Guru. So he does this past life regression. And we did a case on one devotee. And so they're going into the past life. And apparently he was an African American in New York City. And like, you can speak to them. So he started putting on the accent and more cool and stuff. And then he's trying to find out when he met devotees. He goes, did you ever, like, he's talking to him as an African American. He's like, yeah, I did this music, I'm cool. Did you ever meet Hare Krishna? He goes, no. Did you ever chant Hare Krishna? No, I didn't do it. But actually, I met one of those Krishna devotees. I got a book from him. And he got, which book? Oh, I don't know, some people. Did you ever read it? No. Did you ever hear? Oh yeah, I just put it on the shelf. You never read it. So the next time,
that's a modern example of so those who are online. So that's past life regression done by Jayadev Prabhuji. So he did that on a devotee. He found that early life, this particular devotee was an African American background, and he got a book, never read it. Like, so human birth and it's continuing as devotion.
There was a story about one of Prabhupada Sannyasi's disciples, Sannyasi Siddhartha Maharaj, and you know, he was preaching in Japan and different countries, big preacher, that he fell away from Krishna consciousness and fell into all sorts of sinful activity. But right at the end of his life, he was dying, he had AIDS, and he called for he wanted Tamal Krishna Maharaj and different god brothers to come to be with him. And they all came, you know, by Krishna's arrangement. Lots of them came to be with him and give him Krishna consciousness as much as possible before he passed away. And he was very fearful, you know, I've done, there's no single activity that I haven't done. And Tamal Krishna was very shy of him, and don't worry, you're very dear to Prabhupada, and you've done so much for Prabhupada. And then the devotees were there, and he was passing away, and just as he was passing away, he said, Prabhupada, you have come. You saw Prabhupada, he was passing away.
Many instances of. So we end there. Thank you, Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes,
Good job.